in the process of a public hearing on House Bill 5038, which is the Office of Private Health Partnerships. And Mr. Britton, is there something you want to address today, Don?
Madam Chair, members, no. I think we're going to be continuing with the presentation by Rocky King, who's the administrator of the Office of Private Health Partnerships. So we've gotten through part of his presentation. One thing that I know Mr. King would like to talk with you about today is the Healthy Kids portion of this budget, and in particular the outreach efforts that you were asking about last week, as I recall.
Right. Thank you very much, Mr. King. Will you join us? Thank you. I might have to depart shortly, but Ms. Kotek, the representative from North Portland, will be chairing activities.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Rocky King. I'm the administrator for the Office of Private Health Partnerships, and you are moving a lot of names and around, and Representative Boone, if I foul up your name here, and we'll get kind of confused.
I'm her good-looking twin.
I want to first point out that I will distribute to the chair this afternoon the answers to two specific questions that were asked, one by Senator Morissette that related to the amount of federal dollars available under budget neutrality, and Representative Kotek, you had a question about the cost related to childless adults. And we have those. Very frankly, I was gone all morning, and they gave them to me right now, and I wanted a chance to look at them to make sure they're okay before they come to you. So we should have those answers to you this afternoon. Okay. That said, you have the book in front of you. I'm going to be starting just say a few comments about key budget drivers, a couple that I didn't talk about. I'll then go into agency performance measures. I will not go into detail on the prioritized list of programs and services found in Section 5. We only have three programs. It's kind of one, and two. I can talk to you a little bit about that if you have questions. I will then move into the policy option packages. We have one that is minor, Policy Option Package 104, which has to do with one FEOP staff person. No money's attached. We're going to absorb that cost. But 104, I'm sure you're going to want to talk about in more detail. Excuse me, 101, which is the Healthy Kids Plan. I will make reference to Section 7, the Continuous Improvement Initiatives. And then on Section 8, we can kind of go through the budget so that you can see that. In Section 3, we went over the some of the major budget drivers in terms of what's happening with premiums, where we see our enrollment going. I think on page 3 of that section, we want to call your attention to FEOP subsidy costs. That's in the presentation book. I think you should have. On page 3 of section 3, if you look at the FEOP subsidy cost 2002 to 07, you'll see that dip that was taken at the end of 06, and that relates to the decrease in rates that we saw from some of the major carriers. So our costs actually went down while we were having enrollment go down. That created the challenge of having to start to open up the waiting list to bring folks on to make sure that we meet the federal maintenance effort, or the MOE, which we go into more detail on in the next page. The one area I didn't talk about is the Deficit Reduction Act of 2005, and that is where the federal government in 2005 basically passed a law that said if you're going to use state Medicaid or federal Medicaid funds, Title 19, not 21, Title 19, then people had to prove that they were residents of the state. I cannot tell you how devastating that has been on Oregon's population that have tried to access services that involve that. We've seen, for example, our what we call PIND rate. That is, when an application comes in and it's not complete, has almost tripled. And the primary reason is related to those people trying to find and obtain those birth certificate documents that are required. The second thing is, and the reason it's hurt is, you can debate the policy issue, and I don't want to do that, but what happens is 98% of the people that really wouldn't be impacted by this, they're citizens, not all those folks have birth certificates. We had a person in this room a couple days ago who actually is a member of someone's staff who tried to get a birth certificate in January from the state of Louisiana. Here it is in April, and still no word when they're going to get it. And we can't enroll those folks until that time. So that has been a real challenge, I think, for DHS, for us. And the problem you have, of course, is if you ignore it, you put, on the basis of an audit that will be done, a lot of federal funds and state funds at risk if we don't do it.
I just want to say to any of you that have family that if you think you're going out of town, or if you think you need serious data in terms of birth certificates, Rocky is so right. You better send for it if it's out of state. Because it is really, really a problem. Louisiana was already one of those states that took a long time to respond. Mm-hmm. And now since Katrina, that's why I continue to talk about emergency preparedness, because I think that people don't realize what happens when things of that nature take place, that their whole department, I can't even think of the name of the department, birth certificate and whatever else that is, you can't get information. Mm-hmm. And so it is really important that if you're thinking that you're going to go international, that, but it's happening in more states than Louisiana. Louisiana is just an extreme example of why it's important to do that. Thank you, Rocky, for that information.
Madam Chair, I think the other impact, obviously, is the cost of obtaining birth certificates out of state. It can cost you anywhere from $20 to $100, depending on the state. It took me 6 months and $60 to get mine from California. I could afford to wait. I wasn't applying for services, and I had the dollars. But for someone who needs to access one of our programs, either DHS or ourselves, who's low income, lost their jobs, putting up that money, and it really goes into an envelope that goes into outer space because you don't know when the ship's going to come back and put it in your hands. It's very difficult. It's a barrier for all of us.
Okay. Quick question. Have you estimated the administrative costs of not only the pens, but everything you're having to do in reaction to that requirement in terms of what it's costing administratively? I'm just wondering if you can quantify that or if you've been able to.
Madam Chair, Representative Kotek, no, we haven't, but we've talked a lot about it. I mean, we know there's administrative costs to it, but I think that the real cost is in for our clients. I mean, we do what we can do, and we work with them. There are some things that we've done that we've tried to stay within the spirit and letter of the law. An example of that is someone who's already in the program, and it's just redetermination. We just started notifying those people way in advance to try to get them as much time. And I don't want to ask, correct me if I'm wrong, but don't, because I don't want to be embarrassed, but I don't think we've really just kicked somebody out because within a 30-day period they couldn't produce that when they were already in the program. I mean, that was one of the things the governor said. He didn't want to force people out as they were going through this process. It's really the front end when people are first accessing the services. We think the real barrier has been. By the way, if you're born in Oregon, then that isn't an issue because we have arrangements with Department of Human Services and other state agencies where we can access that information online. It's when you're born out of state. And Chair, to continue, I would like to turn to Section 4, which is the agency performance measures. There are four measures that we have that we are proposing to go forward with, and we'll start really in the appendix, kind of the second page of the appendix, rather than looking at the summary if you want to see kind of our history and chart. I'll be starting with the member of stakeholders trained. The four that we have are basically the number of stakeholders. Excuse me. Number of stakeholders trained, enrollment trends, and the CEOP. Excuse me, I'm looking at the wrong thing. The number of stakeholders trained, number of CEOP enrollees, customer service satisfaction, and the CEOP administrative cost. The performance measure number one is the stakeholders trained. For 2005, our target was 1,000, and we trained 3,816. So we were above our projections. I will tell you, just to give you an example, Mark Youngvert, who is in our outreach and marketing unit, is behind us. Just an example of a session. 2 days ago, he went up and had a meeting with individual and group sales representatives of Kaiser at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, drove that evening over the pass to Bend, met with carriers and agents and put on an agent training in Bend, met with a carrier to tell him about the FIAT program in Klamath Falls the next day, drove to Medford, gave some training, went to Grants Pass, I believe, and spent the night. These folks just travel the state, and we really try to take advantage every time we're in a community to not only give training to insurance carriers and to agents, but also to meet with businesses. I have one complaint that was received from the governor's office so far this year about seeing a state vehicle in a shopping center in Newport, and we got to write him and say one of the requirements we have when our folks are out on the road is whenever they're in a community, after they meet in their formal sessions, stop where the businesses are, walk in with the information about FIAP, and leave it there. And so the complaint was a valid one. We had somebody on state business time in a shopping center, but it was not valid in the sense that they were there passing out information. Our marketing folks really do get out there.
Rocky, question on number one.
Yes.
Are you able to track the difference between new folks and retrained folks? Because obviously you need continuing ed for the agents because things change. I'm just wondering if you're able to differentiate between someone who's just getting an update or someone who's brand new. I see head shaking. That would be difficult. No?
Somebody shaking their head behind me? The answer to that with younger is
no, it's very difficult because...
Oh, you need to... Could you come up? Thank you.
He's one of the brains that I talked about the other day.
Thank you for being here. If you could just identify yourself for the record, thank you.
My name is Mark Gilbert. I'm the Information Education and Outreach Manager for the Office of Private Health Partnerships. Madam Chair, I just want to state that we can track the insurance producers because we have a... We give them a certificate that we have to monitor, but a lot of times with the outreach folks that when we go out and talk to our community partners, if we don't look at our rosters and compare them, it's difficult to keep track of any new person that we're training. And just about at every training we have new and people that come back for retraining, just about at every session that we do.
Thank you. I appreciate the clarification.
Thanks, Mark.
Okay. Thanks for coming up. So number two. Sorry to cut you off. Going to get you off track there, Ryan.
That's okay. Second performance measure has to do with administrative costs. Our target was 9%. Our actual is 9.9%. We're getting down there to, I think, what our objective is the 9% level. The 9.9% is interesting. I think that was more caused towards the latter end of the year when we saw the dip take place because of the reduction in the premiums. Because our actual cost on a member enrolled basis went down, whereas this kind of showed an actual just leveling. The FIAP enrollees...
Rocky, just quickly. That actually brings up a question I had because I assume it's costly every time you have to close and then reopen. And I'm guessing that's going to affect. When I saw that dip, I thought, okay, now you're opening again. You're ramping up, ramping down, ramping up, ramping down. Do we have a sense of what's that? Because continuity would probably help you save some costs. I know that's our issue because we have to have continuity of source resources. But do you know how much that costs every time you do it?
Representative Kotek, we don't know how much it costs, but I will tell you that is the most difficult challenge we have, is to balance how many staff to have on, when to have on. We create these peaks and valleys that forces us, for example, to bring on temporary workers for a period of time. If you all of a sudden cripple your applications, your average staff can't do that. Mm-hmm. If they could, then why do we have that many staff? We don't have to triple, so we bring on temporary people. The problem you have is you create a spike, a 2-month or a 3-month spike, that 12 months from then, when you do the redetermination, all of a sudden you're inundated again with applications where you don't have that level staffing. If someone said you have 15,000 in January, you're going to have 15,000 in December, and it's even, I guarantee you that our administrative costs could be less. Because whenever you bring people on to address those spikes, you have that 2 or 3 months training period. You can't bring them in the door without giving them those 2 months of training. And even when you do, it takes more supervisor time, it takes other workers' time to look at their work to make sure we're doing it right. But we have not tracked that cost.
Thank you for. I've been wondering about that for a while, so thank you. Maybe you should. Excuse me, Rocky. Maybe we should track it. To be very honest, I don't know how we would, but you know, one of the issues. I spoke with one of the agents after yesterday, the gentleman who testified, and you know, one of the reasons we're having difficulty engaging businesses for the group plans is. Is it going to be there tomorrow? And, you know, we should be allocating resources in a way that makes the most cost effectiveness. And one of those is not having the peaks and valleys that cause havoc for your administrative costs and everything else in terms of enrolling businesses. So it'd be nice to have some numbers around that. I don't know how you track it, but just throw that out there.
We'll look at that, and Becky, our fiscal manager, is in the office, and we'll do that.
Okay.
You mentioned on the businesses, that is very true. 16 years ago, we closed enrollment in OMIC for a period of 9 months. I occasionally still run into someone who says, are you open yet?
Mm-hmm.
And we've been when you open and close, the word gets there, and we think it impacts not just our program, but OHP too. They'll think, oh, CHIP must be closed. They're not taking no people. No, it's FEOP. And it gets very confusing for folks out there to navigate and understand what's going on with state government programs.
True. Thank you.
FEOP enrollees, this is not how many at one point, but during the year, we wanted to serve 15,800 in 2006, and that figure came in at about 22,123. Again, a lot of that's the peak up and then the attrition down. We're very proud of the next performance measure, which is customer service. Our overall for 2006 was 95.5%. We know that there's going to be a lot of folks that no matter what you do aren't always going to be happy with your decisions, but we want to make sure that they're happy with the process, the timeliness, the accuracy, and the fact that we want to help. An interesting piece is the availability of information, and we are looking at that. I will tell you that our latest survey just came in. It's a little bit higher, about 1% higher overall, but I don't know where it lands in some of those individual things. The expertise at 90% concerns me. Because I want to make sure people get the right answers, but we attribute that to just bringing on those new workers that don't have the expertise for that first 3 or 4 months. But it's something that we watch. It's high, but it's still not where I think we all want it to be. We have a series of ones in meeting with Legislative Fiscal Office, Mr. Breton, and working with DAS folks that we would like the committee to consider for deletion. Number of agent referrals, number of training sessions held, percent of those determined eligible who enroll in FEOP. We had an older customer service satisfaction survey that was different than the one they're trying to do to among all the agencies to get some equity in terms of what we ask. Or the number of businesses that purchase certified plans, that is phasing out in January of this year. There are very few enrollments, as well as the number of children enrolled in the children's group plan. It is not that we're going to not track these. I will tell you, if I ask Mark to say how many agents' referrals we made last year, well, for 2005 it was 4,600. But we have all those figures. We track them because there's staffing issues related to them. It's just that from an agency performance that we think they're kind of redundant. They really lead to enrollments. They really lead to satisfaction as opposed to the other way around. That is, I think, all that I have, unless you have questions on the performance measures.
Yes, Representative.
I have a quick question on the enrollees. In 2005, the actual was 14,000, but the target was 25. Is that just an anomaly?
I'm Vice Chair. I'm going to get confused here.
I have a camera issue.
When you establish these the target figures, they're based on what your budget is or isn't at a particular time.
Mm-hmm.
If you go back and look at the cuts, adds to our budget, we would have to make internal adjustments to manage the program, but we're not allowed to change the targets. At one point, in fact, I think it was when they had the WASC committees, the waiver application, when we first started the waiver application, they actually targeted us to start and get 25,000 into the FIAP program. The budgets, that was special or emergency board. When they finally heard our budget during the regular session, they cut that. But by then, you've set your targets, and we're not allowed to go back and adjust our targets based on what actions. For example, and I'm not asking for this, if you added $50 million to FIAP, I can't go in and just change next year's target. That has to be done through a legislative process.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Britton, I think you had a comment.
Yes. Chuck Hotek and members, I'll be meeting with Rocky when we get closer to a work session on this budget, and if we need to, we'll revise those. This subcommittee and the full Ways and Means Committee can adjust those targets, and we probably will.
Thank you. I was wondering that. I have a question on one of the KPMs you want to delete, number 5.
Which is?
The percent of Oregonians deemed eligible for FIAP who are enrolled in health insurance. And I'm looking at your footnote 6, rationale for deletion. This is an internal measure that has an impact on number of enrollees. It will be continued as an internal measure but does not link directly to the Oregon benchmark, which I assume is the uninsured one. I think it's the type of measure that most people can understand, and I would have concerns about deleting it. Can you talk a little bit more about the rationale of... I think most people read that and they understand what that means, and it's an important measure.
Well, Representative Cookie, let me tell you kind of how it works. When somebody makes application and they're approved, we find that many of those people do not enroll once they're approved. You can go get health insurance. You know, here's a certificate that you can give to the insurer. They may not enroll because of the copays, the deductibles, their circumstances change, a variety of different reasons. We actually really pay attention to that, because when that figure drops, then it means, are we following up? Are we not giving them the good information? Are the agents, if they've asked for agents' assistance, are we not helping them? So by deleting this, in no way were we trying not to look at it. We look at it constantly. It's a very important figure for us. We were just trying, and working with LFO, to narrow down the number of performance measures. I have OMIP, and I have, fortunately, we have one performance measure that's got through the system. So I think there has been some move towards reducing those. We will continue to track, and at the committee's discretion, we're fine with not excluding them. I mean, we have that information that's important to us.
And thank you for the clarification. I do think it's an internal measure in terms of figuring out what you're doing. I also think there's policy implications, and would love to know the different reasons, because what's going on in the market, what can you do differently with the program? We're expending resources to determine eligibility, and then, you know, when we have a low turnout in terms of people who actually get on, then that's a resource issue as well. So I like that measure. We can talk a little bit more about it, but and I understand you're trying to reduce your list. I get that. Yeah. So absolutely. Other questions about the performance measures? I guess we can move on then. Thank you.
Sure. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Section 5, I'm not going to go into detail unless you would like to, but it basically just lists, prioritized lists, since we have FEOP, the Information and Education Outreach Program, Certified Plans for Small Businesses, and the Healthy Kids Plan. Basically, the FEOP Subsidy Program is the highest priority, Information and Education Outreach second. Certified Plans has a less priority. It's not being as successful by any means that we would have liked to have seen, so it will phase out. The legislation has a sunset clause. Healthy Kids Plan is proposed, obviously, as one of the governor's priorities. Now, our budget, and we'll talk about this when we get into the budget, every state agency is required to put in a 10% budget reduction option, and we, as every agency did, and that was accepted by the governor, so that is included in our budget, and we'll talk about that when we get there. Section 6, policy option packages. That's yours. That's mine. Okay. We're going to talk first, I think, about policy option 101, which is the Healthy Kids Plan. Now, you've had a lot of meetings on that. I don't know how much detail you want me to get into the whole program, but I'm going to start with kind of our role, how we see our role, and hopefully enter into some dialogue and answer some of your questions and have an opportunity for you to raise concerns and what some of your priorities may be relative to that program. But FEOP basically Office of Private Health Partnerships has three or four major roles as it relates to the Healthy Kids. We remind you that all eligibility will be done at DHS. And I'm assuming a couple things here. One is that the bill passes and the funding's there. So I'm going to kind of talk to that. And I'm also talking to the governor's recommended budget, which I know may be different if the engrossed version of the bill passes, or if there's a B or C, that's going to change it. So there are going to be some changes, but I'm going to try to go through kind of what's in the governor's budget right now. We have basically three or four roles. After eligibility is determined, if they are above 200% of poverty level, those folks will be referred to us. This isn't put it in the mail. This will have a very close working relationship with DHS. And based on their income, they will have the ability to enroll and receive a subsidy into the Healthy Kids Program up to, right now where the governor's recommended budget is, 350% of the federal poverty level. Above 350% of the federal poverty level, they still will be able to enroll in the program, but there will be no subsidy attached. I think this is really important. Healthy Kids is not a low-income program. Healthy Kids is a program for any uninsured child in the state of Oregon, irrespective of income. But below 200%, there are no premiums. It's 100% paid for through the Oregon Health Plan, through DHS. We'll use the Medicaid Managed Care Program. Above 200 to 350, there's a subsidy attached. In some cases, that subsidy involves tobacco tax dollars and federal funds. For 300 to 350, it is general fund only. And above 300, there is no subsidy.
Rocky, can I just jump in one second? On Section 6, page 1, there's just a small typo. I want to make sure everyone sees that. Third paragraph down, that should be for those over 350%, there's no subsidy. And that's what you said, but I just want to make sure that...
And that should be 350.
Oh, and also... 350 in the previous line too. So we're talking about the 200. It only says 300. So it's from 200 to 350 for the subsidy range, and then 350 and above for no subsidy.
That is correct. This was actually relates, I think, to the engrossed version where it drops it to 300, and that should say 350 as the way the governor's budget is presented.
There's just a difference in how the bill's been moving. So
yes.
Thank you.
Okay, so where is here? So our role then is to provide subsidized coverage for the families between 200 and 350, the non-subsidized coverage for families above 350%. But there's also, for that entire group, from 0 to 350, there are families who are enrolled in group coverage where their children would be eligible for Healthy Kids, either through OHP or through the Office of Private Health Partnerships, but the families wish to choose to keep their child within their group plan. In those cases, we will pay 100% of the subsidy, or 90% or 70%, depending on their income, up to that 350. But they can choose to go in or maintain or go into that group coverage. They don't have the choice to go to the individual market. They either have to take the Healthy Kids plan or their group coverage. So we will play a role in that parents will have some choice. If there's group coverage where the whole family's enrolled together, they can maintain that without having to move somebody out into another carrier or another plan. The next major function that we have has to do with contracting with carriers and plans to provide coverage for children above 200%. Under 200%, we're going to use basically the CHIP program and the local managed care plans. Above 200%, when you start getting into really where the group market and what we call middle class, where they purchase generally from the commercial market, we're going to put out an RFP and look to have at least one statewide carrier that will be able to offer a benefit package that is similar to that offered in the CHIP plan for kids, and then at least one or more local carriers or plans that will offer that. So families, hopefully, except for in very small parts of the state, will have a choice of two provider delivery systems. And when you look at the history of uninsured kids, these aren't above 200%. The majority of these folks have been and had some kind of insurance in the last year. They're people that have been in and out of the market or do have a relationship with some provider someplace. So providing them with some opportunity to choose among different provider groups we think will be really important. Let me just give you an example. On a statewide basis, you may have an ODS or a Pacific Source or a Regents Blue Cross. So they're there every place. They'll have a card that says Oregon Healthy Kids, and down at the bottom it would say ODS or Blue Cross or something like that. But everybody will have one card that looks alike except for that plan. In a local area, if you go to Portland, you may have Care Oregon, you may have Providence Health Plans, you may have Kaiser, in addition to the overall state plan. You'll want some of those resources and different options simply because of capacity. You can't take what we have now and just shove 100,000 kids into it. There are issues around provider access. So in some areas, having additional plans really helps with the access and people coming in. I'll talk a little bit about, we're going to get into some of the marketing piece. The criteria is going to be, and we're working on this now, we have a request for information that we hope in the next 30 or 45 days will go out to all the stakeholder managed care plans, insurance carriers, to try to get some of their input. But we'll be looking at price. We'll be looking at what abilities they have around case management. We're looking at provider access. We'll be looking at their ability to develop coalitions and work with school-based clinics or rural health clinics for talking about rural Oregon. So a variety of different criteria we hope to have. But it's going to be an interesting process, everybody wants to play, I think, in the game, because this is important to, you know, get these kids covered. And so we've got a lot of commitments and a lot of interest, I think, that are starting to surface around that contracting. So that's going to play a key role for us.
Yeah, just a comment on that. I'm glad to hear that the RFI is getting ready. I spoke with one of the insurance agents yesterday, and we're talking about the private product, and he was unaware of it. I think they're due for a revisit on where we are in Healthy Kids, because I was talking to them about promoting that product and they weren't in the loop. So just letting you know, I'm sure the agents will be interested to know what's going on as well.
Representative Kotak, there was just a article in, I think it was the Health Affairs, Craig, was the article on the use of the agents
in California.
In California, but it was out of Health Affairs, right? That really talked about engaging the agents in the outreach efforts and how successful they've been with their CHIP program and Medicaid programs throughout the country. And we haven't gone out and trained on it yet, because it's not there, and we usually don't go out and try to get a whole bunch of support for something and make promises so they come and testify here. We've got to be careful.
But being cautious, I understand.
Okay, the last piece that we're really going to be involved in is the outreach and marketing. And I want to talk about that a little bit, because that, I think, is it's easy to design a plan. Politically, it's tough to get the funding, I know that, but once you get the funding, the administrative piece is also, in terms of the application and the processes and the policies, are pretty easy to get together. What's tough is to get people enrolled. Now, we have found, for example, that there are about 60,000 out of the 117,000 uninsured kids that are currently eligible for OHP but have not enrolled, and there are a variety of reasons for that. One of those is just that we haven't gone out and tried to really aggressively, systematically get those people enrolled. And I don't think the legislature wanted us to do that. This isn't something that people sat back and said, you know, we're not going to go do this. The fact was, you get X amount of general fund, X amount of federal fund, and the last thing you want me to come in here is say, by the way, I went out and I've created a debt for us now of another $20 million general fund. So there's always been a fine balance. You know, in the 1960s, Daniel Moynihan said that the real crime of the war on poverty wasn't that we didn't have programs. It was that we didn't tell people about them. And to some degree, that's true with the Oregon Health Plan. So our challenge really is to find a way to systematically to get out there and to let these people know what's going on. But we have some processes. First of all, we've got to map the demographics. Aaron Kelly Seal presented to you, I think, with the overview of the Oregon Health or the Healthy Kids Plan. And in the back of that, there's some real good information about where the kids are, what income levels. We really need to dig down a little bit deeper and map that from a cultural sense, not just from a statistical sense, too. But once you map those demographics, we're going to have to determine what are the critical targets. I can take all my marketing money and I can go to one county that has a 25% uninsurance rate, get everybody enrolled over a three-year period, and come back to you and say, I've got 5,000 people in, but there's still 95,000 that aren't. We're going to have to figure out how you balance those critical target areas with high-end insurance, where also with some of the areas that have maybe a lower rate, but thousands and thousands more. That'll be a tough process. It's political, it's strategic, it's resource, and we will have to work with the stakeholders and DHS in doing that. By the way, I should tell you, even though this is in our budget, this is really a collaboration on the marketing and outreach between DHS, Uber, the local stakeholders. Although we're taking the lead on it, the lead is really in kind of a figurehead only. There's a lot of people that are sitting around the table as we put this together. We have to identify some of those barriers. First of all, you need to know 100,000 out of 117 is tough when you don't insure the parents. There's enough studies to show that if you don't have parents enrolled, it's tough to get the kids. We'll have to figure out strategies around that. We have looked at some of the administrative simplification. We've reduced the application from its 12 to 2 or 3 pages, although more information will be needed just than what's in those 2 or 3. But we're trying to make sure that there's one point of entry. That'll make it easier, a 1-800 number. That'll that'll make it easier. You also, though, will have a barrier of stigma, and I want to talk about that as it relates to branding. One of the things that we will do around media efforts and raising awareness is try to brand this as Healthy Kids, not an acronym that people don't understand or associate with the state welfare program. This is about all Oregonians, and branding to try to remove some of the stigma. When you put a kid in Healthy Kid, you can be at 750% of the poverty level. You can be at 5% of the poverty level. You get the same benefit. You get everything else. The only difference is how much money you're going to pay for a premium and how much you may pay for a copay or coinsurance or whatever may be there. So it's branding this as not a welfare program, but an access program for kids that also has a component to assist people in purchasing it.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Marcet.
A 12-page application form, and you have a $25 finder's fee, right? For people who will assist in, it says your budget includes $25 finder fee for certified smart people, certified organizations or individuals to help clients complete the application process. That's not a user-friendly application process.
Representative Kotak, Senator Morissette, we've reduced that 12 pages down. The 12-pager isn't going to be there.
Okay.
And so the finder's fee, though, and you know, one of the things we've looked at, for example, is California, where they've used their agents, paid them a finder's fee to go out and get kids into CHIP. We use that in OMIP. We pay a $75 finder's fee for enrolling people into OMIP to agents that are licensed. I'll tell you, it works. These folks get out there and they go to some, make arrangements in their local communities, in the small communities along the coast, where they'll work with their front desk folks to set up tables, provide information, help people get enrolled and in.
Madam Chair, follow-up.
Yes,
Is that a $25 one-time or $25 per application or...
Well, Representative Kotak, Senator Morris, we haven't really determined that. We've just set some money aside and said whether it's agents, whether it's somebody who just decides to take this on and make it their, you know, life dream to get every kid in their community. We're trying just to set aside some dollars and resources to recognize the hours and hours that some of these folks are going to give to these people to help them get enrolled. And it's not enrolled in insurance. It's enrolled in the health and kids program. The insurance piece comes later. We're not sure we want to pay a commission for the commercial product, for example, for agents, because they're not really helping them get insurance and negotiating rates. They're really just helping them going out and finding them and getting them enrolled in a social program.
Representative Morgan.
Well, now I'm kind of confused because what I thought I heard you say was that they were going to be qualified through DHS. So how somebody goes out and finds them, and what happens? They help them fill out an application and take them over to DHS. Is that what this is all about?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, let me kind of go through this because I think you can see what some of the role is going to be and how we're going to use this. Can I get back to that in a couple of minutes? Because I think you'll get to that.
But also, I think maybe, and that's okay, but I think that one of the clarifications is it's more than just filling out a form. And if you're going to get to that, I think, is that what you're planning to? Okay, thanks.
The challenge we have is not really the assistance sometimes of sitting down and helping somebody fill out an application. And when I talk about the grant program, you'll see this. For example, if you want to make headway in Hood River, I can't in Oregon. You cannot enroll 100,000 people from Salem, Oregon. What you have to do is engage the Hood River Migrant Clinic that they have there, who has a relationship with those folks. And there's two ways to really get that engagement, because they're going to have to give some time. One is through a grant program that I'll talk about in a little bit more detail. The other is there may be some folks that say, we can go out into this community and get some folks enrolled, but it's going to cost us some money. And the referral fee is really just a way of helping reimburse and covering some of the cost of these folks going out into the communities, going into their homes, and getting them to get that application in. It may be assisting them. It may be not necessarily taking them down to the DHS office, because this can all be done by mail, but it's really helping get those names in there. I can't go into that home in Salem. I can put it in the paper. I can put it on the news. I can send out flyers through the schools. But what we're going to need, if we really want to get 100,000 kids, is troops on the ground. I think it's the best way to say it. And the only way to do that is through building local coalitions. And one of the things that, in terms of a theme for this whole thing, is I call it community engagement. We've got to get communities engaged and support those communities, whether it's through grants, through resources, what we call toolboxes of resources, or referral fees, to get them into the homes and into the communities to work with those folks.
Well, and also I think having that assistance, you know, what we were mentioning earlier about the Deficit Reduction Act, and some people just finding the documentation. The staffing numbers for eligibility in DMAP are not that large, so there's going to have to be some help on the front end if we're going to do additional eligibility based on the staffing we put at DHS. So I'm assuming the understanding was there'd be more front end help, so in terms of the straight out eligibility, there's less of that to do because the applications are to come in better prepared, is the assumption, I'm assuming.
That is correct.
Can you help me understand, Rocky, who these people would be in the communities?
Let me go through a whole list. First of all, and if you just wait a minute, I think we're going to get to it after in one little piece here. One of the responsibilities we have on a state level, by the way, before I start, is to develop what we call a toolbox of resources, whether that's flyers for schools, whether that's posters for clinics, whether that's information that the business managers of provider offices and hospitals can use. That's our big responsibility. How do we get down to those people in the community, and who are they? The first component is the media efforts that we're going to have, raising awareness. We want everybody in the state to at least understand healthy kids. They don't have to understand the components to it, but we want some branding of the name Healthy Kids. We have a great relationship with Oregon Broadcasters for non-commercial sustaining announcements. It's one up from public service announcements. We know that we can get legislators who have expressed interest in going into their local communities and have public forums. We want to build a knowledge base and raise awareness about this. The second thing we want to do is people can know what Healthy Kids' name is, but we're going to hold in the first year alone 60 statewide training sessions. And if you target 3,000 to 5,000 people trained, and what we want to do basically is create knowledge with our partners. Late 90s, before FEOP though, we went out and held joint sessions with nurses and communities, DHS office staff, local insurance agents, Head Start people. We actually had joint sessions with different stakeholder groups and brought them together around our programs. We want to do that same thing with Healthy Kids. The third component is the outreach efforts, engaging the community. Commercial organizations, grocery chains, I don't know, is it Roth's or one of the grocery chains here, help us with FEOP. Utility companies will do payroll stuffers. The retail chains, we've started talking to some of them, some of the local businesses, about starting to get information out on Healthy Kids. We'll have to target cultural associations and organizations, Urban League, Hispanic Coalition of Oregon, government organizations, children of the Commissions on Children and Families. Just not used, I think, from us on a state level as good as we can. Those are folks that do have their feet on the ground in their local communities and counties. County health departments, the school district, Mark, I wish we don't have time today, but at some point can tell you about discussions he's had with some people from the Education Service District, former chair. I think it was Maryland, one of them, to talk about some of the ideas, how we can use the Educational Service Districts. Then there's the healthcare industry, pediatricians. We've done almost nothing with pediatricians with all of our programs to really get them to play. So the idea is really to the planning up here, the resources up here, and to come down and make sure that the knowledge base and the training occurs at every level. If I can get 10,000 people that know about this program, that have an interest and a commitment to get kids enrolled, I can get to that 100,000. If I can't, get all those folks, then it's going to be really tough. And it just can't be general. Talk about the Asian community, or we have some real challenges in the Asian community. We know that if they came over from a different country, their provider system is very different. The kinds of treatment they get is very different. We'll have to access some of the resources in those communities. We're the ones that are going to have to work on a day-to-day basis to get these kids enrolled. The Russian community, the Hispanic. I don't know if that gets to...
Is that answering your question, Representative Morgan? Specifically enough?
Well, kind of. I'm still having trouble with this kind of finder's fee thing and how it is all going to work. But I think that if you just keep rolling ahead here, it'll work fine.
Representative Warren, did you have a question?
I'm not quite sure. It's not premature also at this point in that your finder's fee or subsidy for bounty hunters, I'm not quite sure I like all of that. Well, thanks, everybody.
Resident Kochek, Resident Gerard, we're not talking about $45 million or whatever it is. We're talking about, I think it's $350,000, and it was just put in there initially to look at the success other states have had with enrolling folks. We haven't really spent a lot of time on it. We don't consider it the major piece. The major piece to us is the local grants that we want to provide included in the budget request is approximately, I think, $6.1 million for statewide outreach. But that includes $3.6 million that really is targeted to the local community.
People behind you.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
It's okay? $6.1 million, is that correct? Okay.
Well, and I think there is a little more detail on those numbers in the what we got that you the budget book in terms of staffing and things like that.
But included in that are $3.6 million that we want to use for what we call local community grants. And we've been working with DHS, Uber, and the governor's office to really develop the framework for the conversation about the structure and the administration and the evaluation of that grant program. It has a evaluation component that will be done by the Office of Health Policy and Research. Once we get kind of
Center. Yes, it's Center Morrison.
Okay. Are you working with a PR firm to develop these strategies?
Madam Chair, Senator Morissette, at this point, the answer is no, because there's no dollars, no staff, and no budget. But let me speak to that. We have sat down, for example, with someone who spent many, many years with Whitey and Kennedy, who is, as you know, one of biggest advertisers now.
General.
They're not with them now, but they were with them many years, Nike and Procter & Gamble accounts. And we really kind of went through, how do you get to these folks? They emphasized the branding, developing the sense of urgency, which relates to the health of the children, the local strategies. We also know that we want to engage in some of those conversations as we progress, because they're going to have ideas, both in the development of the toolbox, but also in how to pull some of those local coalitions together. So the answer is yes.
Follow-up, Senator?
They will probably not accept the name bounty hunter for you. That's a kind of false term.
Actually,
we call it like we see it.
I actually wouldn't mind commenting on that, since we had a long discussion about this in the Medicaid Advisory Committee when we were coming up with the framework for healthy kids. I mean, one of the things is, we can, as you said, say we're going to cover kids, but if we don't do the outreach and retention things that will make it work, then we're really not getting to our goal. And I remember in the committee, one of the things was to look at proven practices. So if you have some information, I believe it's California, but probably other states, this kind of finder's fee approach, because, we do currently provide incentives to insurance agents to get people attached to FEOP, and it's a similar type of thing, at least in my head it is. But it would be good to have what are some of, and with the grants as well. If we're going to spend money for the community outreach grants, we want to do proven things. We're not going to just ask folks, here's some money, go do it. They have to do things that are actually going to work. And so whatever information you can provide, I think there's some interest on the committee about understanding the types of methodologies that you're budgeting yourself for. So.
Madam Chair, we have the article. It just came out in Public Affairs. We will get that to you this afternoon.
Great.
We can do that.
Thank
it's
you.
A great article. It talks about what they've done in some of the other states in terms of trying to engage folks to really make it part of their business to get these folks enrolled. Those grants are very important, and they'll need to be well-defined with measurable outcomes and performance standards. There's got to be financial and program accountability built in. And one of the things we have to focus on is the ability of folks to develop local coalitions and to target specific populations. I can't do this from Salem. But the people in Hood River, the people in Burns, the people in Medford can come together, whether it's the school districts, the provider community, retail chains, the business community. If they come together and sit around the table, they can get it done in those communities. And what we want to do with a grant program is really provide some infrastructure for them and some resources for them to spend times and coordinate those activities in their community. You know, healthcare is funny. I don't care if it's a hospital, a provider, if it's a doc, if it's an insurance company, insurance agent, if it's a state program. Money is always an issue, and I know everybody is interested in, will I get my piece of the grant or will I not? I'm not making any promises to anybody other than bring me the innovative ideas that shows me that you can get more kids enrolled in your area than anybody else. And I don't mean that you take 500 kids and you get them enrolled, but to the same 500 that would have came through the door anyway. What I want is those 500 that came through the door anyway because I had something in the paper or there was something in the newspaper. I'm not worried. I'm worried about the 500 that won't come in unless we knock on the door. And I don't mean that literally, but we've got to figure out a way to get those folks that normally don't come through the system. A lot of them, cultural reasons they don't. A lot of them don't hear about the program. A lot of them are intimidated. A lot of them are concerned about the stigma. But you also have a lot of folks that can afford it and just don't do it. And we need to spend some time talking about the importance of children's health. So that's kind of the overview of the marketing and the budget, or the Healthy Kids piece. Unless you had specific questions, I'll go into some of the budget pieces. Did you want?
Are you going to address the benefit plan options? The benefit plans on page 2 and 3 here.
Benefit plan options. Okay.
The reason I bring that up is I'm just wondering if you'd want to say anything about that portion.
Okay. Healthy Kids, under 200% of poverty level, the benefit plan will be the Medicaid Plus plan, which is currently given to the children enrolled in the CHIP program. That all gets blended together. For above 200%, we'll be using the commercial market, and the statute says that the benefit plan will be equivalent or similar to the Medicaid Plus, which means it's going to have the physical health, but also have mental health and dental coverage. Now, will we use the same list? Well, it'll probably match up pretty close, but it won't be necessarily put out on an RFP that says manage to this list. What it'll be is manage to the same kind of standards you use, but here are things that you need to include and things that you can and should exclude. So we'll be pretty close to where the list is. There's some really, we're still a little early on this. You know, PEB for the state employees is looking how can we look at adopting that prioritized list and how does that line up with state benefits. I think employers have some interest in doing that. The commercial market is not as far off and far away as I think a lot of us believe, because we're getting more and more on the commercial side into evidence-based medicine. And that is kind of what the list is about, what works and what doesn't work. So it'll be a good benefit package covering those three major areas, physical, mental health, chemical dependency, as well as dental coverage. And the average price is targeted right now, I think, between $160 and $170. That will somewhat depend on what our analysis is of the mix of kids that will come in specific areas. If you have a whole bunch of six-month-old children, they're a lot more expensive than, you know, a 13-year-old child. So some of those premiums may be above, some below, but it'll be averaging that in that particular area, we're hoping.
Thank you. Representative Morton.
Thank you. Another piece of this I don't understand is I hear very clearly that the Office of Private Health Partnerships has the responsibility in the Healthy Kids Plan of setting up the framework to get people signed up for the benefits. I mean, that's what I hear you saying. The other issue is that you're going to, if this is successful, then there is going to be a dramatic increase in kids all across the state that are enrolled in this program, and then there has to be some kind of a process to get care to them. And you've got, I know in my district, in Representative Grudge's district, and probably Representative Boone's district also, huge issues around the capacity to provide the care. Especially like with dentists are a great example, that there simply aren't enough empty slots in the dental community to take care of what is going to happen. And so I'm wondering who in this, in the way that the responsibilities are jobbed out for the program, where does it happen that we take the responsibility for making sure that whoever signs up for the program actually gets the services?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, yeah, that's a great, great question. You know, it relates to not just this 100,000 kids, but the 600,000 uninsured. If we had a magic dollar to get every one of those people insured and brought them under the tent today, the question is, could they ever make an appointment with a doctor? Do we have the capacity to do the kinds of things with all those uninsured? And the answer is, we're doing it now, and the problem is going to get worse over the years, and bringing those folks in is going to create a challenge. I'm not familiar with the details. Maybe somebody on the committee is, but I know the governor has a healthcare workforce initiative and a variety of proposals that they've made, and a task force that's been looking at that. I think having perhaps Dr. Janine Smith from Uper or Dr. Bruce Goldberg probably in a better position to talk about what they're doing around healthcare workforce development. I know in the private sector you have ODS, for example, who is, I think it's Willamette Dental, a couple of the dental companies. One of those, I'm not sure which, I just heard a presentation. I think it was Willamette Dental actually has a kind of a bonus program to get dentists to coming out of school to locate into rural communities. So even the private sector programs are starting to look at some of the kind of incentives to get more docs and more dentists into Oregon. I'm not the one that really has the expertise there.
Well, then could I just ask one follow-up question? On the timeline that you envision from the point of view of enrolling children, what's the timeline between when the program is implemented and when you expect that you'll reach the capacity?
Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, I think it's a 3-year plan.
So then the other side of that would be that there needs to be some kind of 3-year plan to staff up to the level that's needed to meet the needs of the people that we're going to get enrolled.
Yeah, Representative Kotek, Representative Morgan, I will tell you that over the next 3 to 4 years, more than 100,000 new people, just by the fact of our population growing, there is an expanding need for providers, not just because of this program, but just the general population.
Well, and if I might, I absolutely understand this, but I think that it needs to also be a big part of this discussion that this program will really exacerbate that number, that we're going to do exponential things here to the expectations for care, and that there has to be some kind of a way to look at how we're going to actually deliver the services.
Chair, Representative Morgan, I agree with you, and as I said, I think there are some folks that can come in and sit down and talk about the workforce development and the studies they're doing and some of the initiatives. I will say we created some vacuum not many years ago when we took off 90,000 people from the Oregon Health Plan who had access at that point. That vacuum, I think, has probably been filled rather rapidly, but it is an issue. I'm just probably not the expert to talk about what they're doing.
Representative Gouard and then Senator Morissette.
Thank you, Representative. Rocky, I'm kind of piggybacking on Senator Morgan's question. Representative Morgan. Did I promote you? I apologize.
I don't know if there's a promotion. I think
those children that are going to fall into the 200% of the poverty rate will be paid for out of Medicare.
Above or below?
Below.
Below that, Representative Jarrett, those will be enrolled with the DHS Medicaid CHIP program. It'll be called Healthy Kids. It's not going to be called CHIP, but they will be managed through their managed care organizations that they already contract with. There will be some kids that will be in a fee for service because, if, as you know, you get into some of the rural Oregon areas, there just aren't the managed care organizations access that you have on the I-5 corridor. For example,
some might be in FEOP as well.
That's true.
Yes, follow up.
Mm-hmm. We're already having a problem with some physicians who won't, on the provider reimbursement, won't accept patients. Wouldn't you see this as compounding that problem?
I'm sure, Representative Gerard, on the below 200%, that's still going to be an issue.
Okay.
Above 200%, our expectations is that we'll be using commercial carriers who pay commercial rates. And our experience with OMIP, for example, which even though it's a state program, we use a commercial network. We rent a provider network. We have not had problems with access of our third-party administrator's network. Unless somebody misunderstands and think it's OMAP rather than OMIP. But if it's OMIP, we pay a commercial discounted rate. But it will be an issue.
Before I get to the senator's question, in the governor's budget, there was some assumption with the revenue package that went with the tobacco tax for increasing the reimbursement rates. Am I correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Madam Chair. Senator Morissette?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Morgan, thank you for asking that question, because that is the bottom line question. Do we have an adequate health delivery system, particularly in rural Oregon? Now, I don't raise that question, you know, to the detriment of the program, but I think that, you know, it's going to be kind of hard to get excited about a program and if we don't have that. Now, that question should be raised, and it should be answered, and we should find out, you know, if we're going to run into some problems. Now, to mitigate that, it's a phase-in, so you're not going to need it all at once. So, but I think that it is going to require some planning, and we have to get the kind of information that we need before, you know, as we talk about creating a workforce and where do we need them and what are we going to do. So I think that's a critical point that we need to spend some time on.
Well, and I see it as a critical timing issue, that you don't beef up the service providing part of it in the short term. You can get probably some, you know, lower level people, but if you want dentists and doctors and highly qualified people, it takes time to get there.
You're right.
And then, you know, then the issue with if you're sending them essentially Oregon Health Plan reimbursement patients, you've got other issues that presents.
Thank you. I think it's an important question, and I'm guessing, I don't know, we could check with the Office of Health Policy and Research whether or not this is something that will be as part of the evaluation as we go, evaluating the capacity of the communities in terms of service delivery. I would like to think, you know, increasing the availability of resources will help drive the market for additional providers, but I do think it's a question to be answered. Senator?
Thank you very much. I'm involved in the Health Reform Committee. And I keep asking over and over and over, and I'm not getting the answers of building the foundation. Do we know who's out there? Do we know where the gaps are? Any health system is a local delivery system. It is absolutely local delivery. And I don't think that we have examined that enough in the Health Reform Committee. That would go hand in hand with this, because in order to implement a universal coverage, you know, we're going to have to figure out what's out there. We're not doing a very good job, I don't think, in figuring out what's out there. And that's, you know, will go hand in hand with what we're talking about now, is to know who the providers are. A lot of the, there are a lot of providers who do things on a, well, not fee for service, no fee for service basis. They actually donate their time. And I'm afraid that we're going to set up a system that discourages people from doing that. So I think a really good inventory for both programs is absolutely essential. And we do have to backfill places that don't have that kind of service base.
Mr. Britton, do you know if there is any of that type of information? Is this something that's been quantified?
Madam Chair and Representative Morgan, I don't know.
Because I do, I mean, it is an issue, I think, that is really central to the success of this program, and it's incredibly, it's a real empty promise to the people of the state that you're going to cover all children's health issues if all you've done is set up a process to give them a card and there really isn't anything on the other side of it that meets the need.
And I always think that capacity issues are definitely an important issue. I think one of the things we have to remember is, in general, the number of kids who are going to be insured through Healthy Kids will be relatively healthy. And one of the things that we're dealing with is, you know, if a child needs hospitalization, some other things that they're not covered, I think it depends on the type of services we think will be taken up as a result of the insurance. And I just want to shift gears a second, because I've been thinking about performance measures on Healthy Kids, and I don't know where the process is on this. When do we start talking about performance measures, and how do we put those in place? But one of the questions about whether or not, so if a child gets insurance, are they doing anything with it and tracking, you know, number of well visits and things like that? So I think capacity is related to the type of service, and so that's maybe a kind of a deeper layer on looking at the capacity, because all kids are not going to need the types of services we might see in the Oregon Health Plan standard population, for example. You know, we have a range of healthiness among the kids, and they're going to need different things at perhaps different levels of capacity need in the community. So something we need to figure out. Excuse me. Other questions?
I agree with you. I think that would be a great conversation for this committee to try to have, to see what the potential needs are and how they match up with the potential availability of services.
Well, we can check into that and see if we have some of that information to share. I'm not sure either from what the discussions we've had. That might be a question for Uber.
Madam Chair, if I recall, there was a study done, I think it was through the health division, that looked at mapping out providers, where they were, how many, where do we stand relative to other states. And that was 2 or 3 years ago, I think, or 3 or 4 years ago that was done. But we'll contact Dr. Goldberg and Dr. Smith and see if they've got something that... And we'll also touch bases with the governor's office so they can maybe make arrangements through Mr. Britton to talk or provide some information on some of the healthcare workforce initiatives that they have going.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So So does that wrap us up on the policy option?
That, except for policy option package 104, Madam Chair, we're asking for one FTE who will be an information IMD, a management specialist. We only have one person that fools with the computers and the webs and all that, and it's very, very tough for us. We have to contract out for services occasionally when we have crisis or overload of work. So we're really asking that we establish one position. We'll be able to figure out how to pay for that internally, primarily through savings by not contracting out at $90 or $100, $120 an hour to bring somebody in to do things that, that very often we should be able to do ourselves at a much lower cost. So we're asking for permission to establish that one FTE.
Okay, just to clarify, so the position authority, not necessarily the funding.
No money attached, just position authority.
Representative Morgan?
Are your systems part of the statewide data processing? What is the name of the project that you just got through?
Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, not at this time. At some point, that will move over. We're a very small agency. There's not going to be a lot of savings there, but there's a schedule that's, I'm a part of DCBS on the OMIP side. We've moved over to that shared service, but right now we're not designated to do that. We're off-site, and so we have a little bit different setup than some of the state systems that are already attached.
So right now, is your information system is actually in the office where you all are?
Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, that is correct.
And so this just adds another staffer to help facilitate keeping everything running.
Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, it's just not the system. It's the web design. It's servicing the computers. You know, when you have 45 computers and all the software, if you've got, there's just we have our own proprietary program, for example, for the FIAP program that was written and designed to manage that. We do a lot of electronic data sharing with the insurance carriers for our billing process in the group or in the individual market. So it's more than just keeping a server going. That isn't the hard part. The hard part is the support to all the systems that use that server.
If the Healthy Kids Initiative comes into being, what's that going to do to your need for information systems development?
Madam Chair, Representative Moore, that's a great question. It will increase our needs, and we've built that into the Healthy Kids budget, primarily from a database. It'll be somewhat of a revised database because it's a little bit different than we have now with the FIAP, and it'll have to tie into FIAP because FIAP will play one role of the Healthy Kids in terms of the children that are in group coverage. We'll also have to make sure that our systems can talk with DHS systems because we'll want to be able to share information around eligibility. People who drop out of insurance, we've got to let them know. So it's a challenge, but the administrative challenge to me compared to the enrollment and outreach challenge, I think we can handle the administrative piece. We've done that. It's the enrollment and outreach that I think is the real challenge, and as you mentioned, the access, that we have the access capacity.
Thank you.
Yes, Senator Morrison.
Thank you. Mentioning FIAP, there's a 10% reduction in FIAP subsidy payments, reduces caseload by 1,400 per month. What is that all about?
Madam Chair, if you want to turn to Section 8, the front page, first page in that, which is the governor's recommended budget, I think Senator Morissette get to your question. It is under policy package. Again, that's the first page there. If you go down to the bottom, you'll see where it says policy packages, about an inch and a half from the bottom, number 90. Analyst recommended adjustment. We can blame Eric next to me, but it's not Eric. It's every agency put forth a
10% okay.
reduction.
Okay.
And that is about, I want to say, about 3,000 less people that we we can serve. It's not 3,000.
Yes,
3,000.
Okay. But the co-chairs didn't put it back because they didn't think it was
important. Co-chairs budget actually reversed that.
Oh, they did put it back?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Madam Chair and Senator Morissette, the co-chairs added that funding back.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So this one takes away $2.7 million general fund. The co-chair's budget adds the $2.7 million back to FEO.
Oh, good.
So we have only a few minutes left. And I think my understanding is this is our last day, at least for this section of you coming before us. I just wanted to point out to folks that there are some beginning key performance measures for healthy kids under tab. I guess they're in the appendix.
Included in the appendix section on the policy option package, which is policy option package 6. Madam Chair, I would like to say, at some point, we've got to fund the project that says, are the kids healthier here than when they were here? We did that in FEOP when we first started. We got a Robert Woods Foundation grant that looked at perceived health. It wasn't an actual measurement of blood and all that. It really measured those folks that were on the waiting list versus those folks that had been enrolled for a period of time and found tremendous difference. We haven't got, I think, the sophistication yet to do that, but I think we need to get there because that has to do with there's a difference between the health of our kids and just access. Mm-hmm. Access by itself doesn't create health, but it creates an opportunity for it. We just have to figure out how we can measure it.
Well, one of the things we could look at is some of the public health measures. I would assume we get all kids covered and they are attending to their well visits once a year. When we look at the Healthy Kids Survey data, where it talks about have you seen a doctor or a dentist in the last 12 months, those numbers are going to change. So there might be some other measures out there that we can look at for the general health of the child population that we can tie back to healthy kids outside of the enrollment data and use data that we have for the program itself. So, we'll have to figure out ways to track that. Hopefully, Uper will have some suggestions. Final questions or final comments?
Well, I haven't gone through the budget. I'm assuming we can do that at we're doing your work session, or do you want me on that just to kind of go through?
Well, Madam Chair and members, we went through this budget pretty quickly the other day, mm-hmm. but I think if you have questions, we can get to you individually and talk about that. This is not a particularly complicated budget, in my opinion, but if you do have questions, you're welcome to talk to me, or Rocky, for that matter.
I see heads nodding. Well, John, if people come back and we have lots of the same questions, we might want to bring back for some public discussion, but I agree with you. I mean, in terms of some of the other budgets, this one's a little more straightforward. And you've kind of addressed some of where this is coming from in your presentation.
The other thing I wanted to mention is that in the very back of the presentation book is a whole discussion of Healthy Kids, more discussion. And this was, I believe, a handout that was given to this subcommittee, at least part of it was, when Ms. Kelly Seal came and talked to us about House Bill 2201. So there's more discussion on Healthy Kids in the back of this presentation book.
And, Madam Chair, we'll be distributing to you a response to your questions that you raised and Senator Morissette raised. We'll be talking with Dr. Colbert and Dr. Smith and the governor's staff about the workforce issues. We also will be giving John some, Mr. Britton, some packets that speak to this customer service and things that people have written us about the program, some of our enrollees from the surveys that we do every month, and we'll provide that to you also. And I'm available to meet with you individually or come back to the committee at any time, and it's just been an honor to be here.
Well, thank you, Rocky, and thank you to your staff. I know it was a lot of work to put the presentation together. With that, we are adjourned.
Thank you.